if I were to start talking like this, and this is what my speaking voice is, and this is how I'm going to sing my life, and it just, I don't know, it kind of sounds like this. It's not bad.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 68. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and we come together on this podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my very good friend,
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis, the entrance caught you a little bit by surprise there, huh?
It's because all I heard was da-na-na-na, and I was like, oh, because for some reason I don't hear the rest of the music when you play it.
Oh, that's very sad. Well, hey, Travis, this week I watched the movie Don't Breathe, and you listened to the indie pop band Mr. Wives.
Yes, those things are true.
They sure are.
We are off to a great start today. Listen, so I have had enough sleep. For a change, and we're recording kind of in the middle of the day, which is nice, and so neither of us are tired, and maybe I'm loopy.
Maybe you do seem a little giddy. Maybe it's summertime.
Summertime. Although, you know, so I am officially, I guess I'll start. I'm officially on hiatus from my jobs, and so I have free time that I have to now work at using wisely, right? Mm-hmm. So I really have to get down to, you know, the discipline to write my book, stuff like that is really weighing heavily on my mind. I have been moving very slowly this last week because of my foot and my toes, which are healing, but still not quite, you know, really walkable. So I'm able to go on walks around the block, but I haven't gone on a hike yet, which I'm really missing. I was really hoping to, once my hiatus started, to like get into hiking every morning and getting back in shape. So I'm missing that. We had a great party for the end of the season on the talk and took pictures with all the hosts and all that. It was great and got some really great compliments from not only my stage manager, but also the coordinator for the show who is being promoted to a producer level role for next season. And they were just effusive in their compliments to me and about, you know, my talent and stuff like that. So that was really nice to hear in person, like in a public, you know, venue like that. And then Saturday, I did a shoot with a friend of mine where I was playing a stork, or the stork that delivers babies, but kind of an anthropomorphized version. So, but I had a lot of prosthetic makeup on, and we were shooting outside in the valley, and it got to 89 degrees on Saturday. And so it was a lot, but it was a fun shoot, a very professional first time shoot for one of my friends from UCB sketch. And so it was really and also flattering because very rarely do people ask me to be in their projects. I used to feel a little bit hurt about that, to be honest, because I was always making things and casting other people in them.
Sure.
And so I was like, well, how come no one pays that favor back to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so this is now someone who I didn't actually give that favor to, just coming to me because she knew from class that I was very talented at voices and stuff like that. So so that was really flattering. And then on Sunday, I went to the beach. There was a little gay get together at the gay beach, which is
okay. Now, come on, gay together was right there. It was right there. There was a little gay together.
Yeah, that's really nice. I like that. I'm gonna start using that.
All right.
That's great. I like that. Just like we do game night, but we spell it with G-A-Y. But that's hard to pronounce. You know, you don't get that in the pronunciation. I like a nice gate together. But at the beach, it was my first time at the beach in a year, and it was really nice to get back there. And everybody had puppies there now, and it's like, I wanted to take Coco, but I was like, oh, I don't think dogs are allowed on the beach. But like, I went there, and there were at least 5-6 dogs there. And so I was like, oh, Coco would love this. And of course, even though it's sunny, the weather is nice and cool right on the beach. It's like 70 degrees. It's perfect. It was a beautiful day. Nice. So I can't wait to take her. Yeah, she's going to love romping in the surf, I think.
Well, that sounds super fun.
Yeah, so that was a decent weekend. So how was your week?
My week was pretty good. Just working a lot and working on music a lot. We are ramping up for the first session of Girls Rock here in Milwaukee. That is next week. So I think our orientation and load-in is on Sunday. And then it's 1 week, and then the performance is the following Sunday. So that's really fun. Also, I remember telling you that I worked with my wife on a big painting project last week. What I didn't tell you is that I got paid for that, which was fun. And I
Did say you purchased some stuff from your ill-gotten gains.
Yes, and I did. I got new parts for the drum kit, and I've been using them this past week. And I got to tell you, you know how sometimes you're kind of eyeing something up for a while and you have a sort of pros and cons list in your head, and eventually you purchase it and you're like, you know, I shouldn't have pulled the trigger on that. That's not what this was at all. These are awesome. I definitely, I was like, oh, this is fantastic. It's a big upgrade over what I had before. And I'm so happy to be playing around with my new toys. So there's that.
That's exciting. So when you say parts to drum kit, what you're talking about, like a drum or?
Yeah. So I got a new pedal or what? I got a new snare drum and I got a new cymbal. So when you listen to drummers, they'll say, like, if you're going to upgrade something. So everybody wants, like, cool-looking drums. But basically, the drums themselves are, like, the last thing you should upgrade on the drum kit. Because ultimately, the other parts of the kit matter much more for the sound and the playability of the thing than the actual. Like, the drum shells, they're not irrelevant, but they're kind of irrelevant. You know what I mean?
So you gotta lead me a little bit. So you're talking the shell is the frame.
Yeah, the shell
and
is
separate from the membrane.
Right. The heads are easily replaceable, and apparently the heads that come on kits are very garbage. Right.
And that's the thing you hit. The part that you hit is the head.
And then the part that's got like color on it and is the round part. That's the shell. Okay.
Huh.
Huh, and
I wonder now if there's a lot of people listening that have, like me, not actually thought about the components to a drum.
Yeah. There's different bits and bobs, but so they say upgrade your cymbals because the cymbals that come with kits are really very, very bad, and good cymbals will make a huge difference in your sound, and I've absolutely found that to be true. And then the next thing they say is to replace the default heads that come with your kit, because the default heads are like the lowest possible, like, this works type of situation.
Sure. Yeah, so that all makes very good sense. Yeah. So that's what you did.
And so, yes, that's what I did. I got a new cymbal, which I really, really like. And I got a new snare drum, which has a new head on it as well. But it's a bigger snare drum, so it's got a little more boom to it, which I like.
Oh, nice. Yeah. All right. That's exciting. Good.
Yeah.
Good toys to play with, literally.
Yeah, good toys to play with.
What else you got?
Sunday night, Amy and I went to see Cthulhu the Musical. It was actually, so we're taping this on Tuesday, and that's the reason that I couldn't tape at our usual time on Sunday evening. There's a puppet theater in Oregon. I think it might be Portland, Oregon, but don't hold me to that. And the troupe is called Puppeteers for Fears, and Cthulhu the Musical is a like a horror comedy musical. It's funny. They had a full band, which is three people. They had five puppeteers, and then they had a person running the sound and lights, and they had a merch table person. So they had 10 people touring, and this is around the country. So a pretty big production. You know, I can't imagine that anybody's getting paid very much at all, but very, very impressive, really beautiful puppets, great high quality professional puppeteering, a fun show. I really, really liked a lot of it. They used a combination of like projection and and live puppetry to sort of get you to like the different scenes and everything. Really, and a little bit of ad-libbing, but not so much that the whole thing went off the rails. So I really enjoyed it. Puppeteers for Fears, if they're coming to your town, I highly recommend checking them out.
Nice. That sounds a lot of fun. That reminds me of the Harry Potter the Musical gang that was doing a series of like musicals based on things like Harry Potter, and I think they did a Batman, and they did, you know, other things. And they were surprising, like the musical quality was surprisingly good. Mm-hmm. And these were just college kids who were doing this thing that started on, I think, YouTube, and then they started touring.
Oh, nice. So, very cool.
Yeah, just fun stuff. That's great. Sounds like a fun show.
Yeah.
I did want to say at some point I might like you to educate me on the history of drums.
That the just kind of occurred to me. History of drums. A bit. Wow.
Yeah. Like how did we go from banging on a thing like a rock or a thing to stretching a piece of probably hide
over skin.
It
yeah,
to skin. Yeah. Yeah, so I just am curious about how that whole thing developed. I also was going to ask, is Girls Rock once a year?
There are two camps. Each of them is 1 week long. There's one at the end of June and one at the end of July. And then there's Ladies Rock, which is the adult version, and that's just a weekend. So Friday,
right. It just seems like Girls Rock was so recent, but it's been almost a year then. So
yes, yeah. Ladies Rock was very recent. That was in March, I want to say.
Interesting. Yeah. And we did realize that Keith's mom was in Madison.
Yes, which is a Ladies different. Rock. So all of the different Girls Rock organizations are independent of one another, basically, so that because we don't need the administrative overhead of a national organization running it. And there are many different Girls Rocks around the country, but Girls Rock Milwaukee is ours. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Excellent. Well, let's say we go ahead and get into the meat of this episode, huh?
Yeah, let's barbecue it up. Why don't we shake things up this week and do the... Yeah. Let's do the music first, please.
All right, let's do the music first. Tell me about Mr. Wives, Matt.
Well, Mr. Wives is an indie pop band. They have not been around for a super long time, only about 10 years. I gave you their debut album. There's a lead singer, Mandy Lee, and then there's three or four other musicians. And what do I like about this? I like how upbeat it is. This is get you out of your chair and get you moving type of music. And this is not depressing. This is fun. And I don't know that there's a whole lot else to say about it from my standpoint. I heard this album and I just really got into it right away. They've released three or four other albums. They're all really good. I can highly recommend each of them.
How long ago was it that you were exposed to them?
Right after this came out, 2015, I was into them right away because somebody else pointed them out to me, not because I was smart enough to get onto this band. But... the album is called Our Own House, and it's got some bangers on it. They've toured pretty relentlessly, too, so they're pretty easy to see live.
Didn't you say that you saw them at Pride Fest?
They were at Summerfest. I did not see them, but they have toured through Milwaukee a couple of times. They've been at Summerfest a couple of times, and I think they've also come through on their own tours.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
So, Travis, what did you think?
Matt, my week... So, here's the deal. I'm both happy and sad about this this selection. Happy because my week was made notably better because of this music. I loved it. It was, as you say, happy and upbeat and joyful and really good music. The only thing I am upset about was that I wasn't able to listen to this on a hike because because of my my temporary disability with my foot. I would have loved to be outside and enjoying this music in the world with my normal, you know, my views and my you know, my exercise that I'm getting. I think it would have been perfect for hike energy. But as it was, even just walking Coco around the block, or I listened to it while I was driving to the beach, it was so much fun. The pace and the everything about it too, the instruments and the songwriting, the lyrics, mm-hmm. All very fun and interesting. There is one thing that I kind of have a quibble with, and that okay. is the sound of the lead singer. She has this sound quality that it feels very reminiscent to something we listened to fairly recently, and I can't really remember what it like. Maybe a Olivia Rodrigo or something okay. like that. Where and I it would have been something I maybe brought up where the she sounds like a. She doesn't sound like a normal person. She sounds like almost not a baby singing, but like a child singing.
Wow. And okay.
It sounds like but she's a great singer. Like her accuracy and vocal range and all that stuff is fantastic. It just has this, and this is where I wish we could play clips on this show. But there's this like tonality to her voice that sounds like either it's influenced by like Japanese pop or K-pop or something where it's like it doesn't sound like a normal person singing, like mm-hmm. when you listen to Madonna or Adele or Taylor Swift or really anybody, it's you get this kind of normal voice. You know what it sounds like? It sounds a lot like a kind of an evolution of Bjork.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
Do you? You're not familiar with Ellie Goulding by any chance, are you? That
no.
is sort of. She. The only reason I ask is because one, I would say her voice shares a lot with Ellie Goulding. But two, like you do know Lady Gaga and other female singers that were popular around the same time as Ellie Goulding, so you might have been exposed to her through like the dance scene.
Now that you've said her name several times, it's starting to like spark like things of familiarity in my brain, but I couldn't place her.
Yeah, it's funny, right? Because you almost want to describe it as breathiness, but that's not quite what it is, but it's sort of adjacent to that, right? There's just this sort of ethereal quality that doesn't sound
it's
quite
like
real.
If I were to start talking
like this, and this is what my speaking voice is, and this is how I'm going to sing my life, and it just, I don't know, it kind of sounds like this. It's not bad, but it's annoying at first, but then your brain starts to get used to it.
And then I'm going to stop. because my brain started to get used to it, but then it kind of like went back to being annoyed by it by the literally fourth time I went through this album. So
wow, holy cow, yeah. You played this a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think you played it more than I did this week.
I truly enjoyed.
Yeah.
Pardon? Yeah.
I think you played it more than I did this week.
So I did enjoy it quite a bit, except for that, which I really kind of want to get to the bottom of. And I feel like it's a trend now, right? Mm. I feel like it's like where at one point everybody had vocal fry, right? Every especially female singer had a lot of vocal fry in their voice. This seems to be something I'm hearing more of. And I think maybe if I were to ding this for anything, it would be that her voice isn't, to me, because of this, original and unique. It sounds like it's something that is being put on or performed or selected as a vocal quality. But that being put aside for a second, this band should be way bigger than they are. They are so much fun, and the music is danceable and really does get you moving. It's a perfect for like I thought you were saying that they were at Gay Pride. It's a perfect pride festival or gay dance club music, sure. Right? I wanted to dance to this so hard, and there was no weak spot of this album. Everything was fun, and you know how we've talked about music that is too much good, right? Yeah. I can't remember who it was, but it was like, it's just too much. Like if you heard one song from the album in a mix, it'd be perfect. But hearing every song in the album together is just too much. This wasn't that. It was enjoyable the whole way through. And maybe there was just enough variety in the tone or the pace or the energy level in each song.
Yeah, I'm actually curious. I haven't listened to their most recent albums, but I'm actually curious how they've evolved, because this music is all very much of a piece. And I don't think I'd want four albums of this, right? Like there's a little bit of variation on this, but not enough to make me go, there's a career there. And so I'm curious if how they've evolved. I'm sure they have, right? Everybody evolves, artistically. But it would be interesting to find out where they've gone, because this album is just a pure bit of like sugar and light, and you know, it's not that it doesn't address any difficult subjects ever, right? But it's not dour or morose at any point, you know?
No. In fact, there are some good messages around female empowerment and stuff like that. And I thought that was very interesting. It's funny, you said sugar, and the thing that popped into my mind was that, like, how, you know, how there are sugar pop, like, just super sweet whatever out there. I feel like this is a sweet treat more, like cookies, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is a full-on baked good that you could eat a bunch of and not get sick of, you know?
Yes,
and
I do.
You know, it's a good metaphor.
It's a perfect metaphor. No notes.
And, yeah, so I, the only other thing that I could possibly critique about this is that although there are good recognizable tunes, and like when you listen to them you're like, oh, I even in my head I'm still thinking about Our Own House and Not Your Way, the first couple songs in the album, very recognizable and still kind of playing in my head, but not as like iconic as if you think of Madonna's greatest hits or something like that. You get some really great singles.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say this is like sing along music, right? You know, I would say it's dance along music.
It's 100% dance along, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would love them to have like a breakout hit, like a single that just is huge, and it just needs a little bit more of a hook. That's all. Something a bit bigger. I don't know.
Yeah, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, if you look at their...
They deserve more. They deserve to be bigger, I think.
Yeah, if you look at them on Wikipedia, their albums charted, the first couple albums charted, and then their second two have not charted. But they've continued releasing a fair amount of music. And I don't know, you know, maybe they need to get signed to a major label and get the whole A&R thing, right? They're on sort of like these indie labels that are sort of big indie labels historically. You know, maybe, yeah, I would like them to be bigger. And I'm not sure what would, if it's just that they're not, maybe the scene isn't what it needs to be for them to be popular right now. Because, you know, popular music right now is dominated by a certain style I would say like a fusion of hip hop and rap and then you know, pop and even pop country, right? There are all these genres that there's all this intermixing going on. And this is pretty like siloed. Like this is indie pop that doesn't really have influences from other genres.
That's interesting, and I think this music is unavoidably enjoyable, right? You cannot help but like get into it when it's on. And so I would love for them to be discovered by something, by more people. And, you know, maybe I'll go ahead and share this album or this playlist because I don't normally do that. And it's not something, well, and here's the thing, like normally I'm way behind the trend on enjoying things, but I'm looking at YouTube Music and seeing that they only have like 150 some thousand subscribers to their, and I'm like, well, that's not enough. They should have millions.
They should have more. So, they should have more.
Yeah, I agree with that. So anything else you know about them that that might in
honestly, in some... I know very little about this band. Right? They are. I think they might be Brooklyn hipsters, to be honest with you. But sort of behind the trend when it comes to Brooklyn hipsterdom, right? That was cool in the 2000s, but they're from 2015. They're from New York City. So you got anything else you want to say about this?
No. I just thank you for, this was a good one. I really enjoyed this one. So more of this type of thing, please.
Well, that, you know, if I could just snap my fingers, as you know, we don't always like the things that we think we're going to like. So
that's what true. Well, maybe our viewers are out there and they have something similar to this that they can recommend.
Yeah. What, Travis, do you give this for a rating?
I'm going to give this, I'm vacillating between an 8 or a 9. And I would say this was almost perfect, except for the two dings that I mentioned. The voice is kind of just goes back and forth between annoying and not. And also the lack of just stuff that I can sing along to or perform at karaoke. And I want to say, so that's going to leave it at you know what? Those are middling things. I'm going to give this a 9. This was super fun.
All right. Cool. Well, for me, this is music that I really, really like. But, you know, like I said, I haven't been moved to, like, listen to their more recent albums. I've basically stuck to the first two. And so maybe that's indicative of some sort of softness in my love for them. So I'm going to say that this is an 8 for me. You're absolutely right that it's either an 8 or a 9. But I think it's going to fall slightly below that 9 level for me. So it's an 8.
Nice. All right, great.
All right. Well, Travis, tell me about the movie Don't Breathe.
All right. Well, Don't Breathe is the second film by director Fede Alvarez, and it is a 2016 horror thriller. And the interesting thing about it was actually co-produced by Sam Raimi, who I think has a pretty interesting relationship with Fede because Fede's first movie, and interestingly enough, he came from doing shorts on YouTube, like putting his shorts out into the world for people to see, and then got recruited to direct a feature film from Ghost House Productions. And the first thing that he did with them was the Evil Dead remake back in 2013, which I auditioned for but didn't get. But this movie was his second movie, his follow-up, and it's an interesting film. It is a it changes some things about the tropes of horror movies, where you oftentimes have kids, teenagers who are stalked by a bad guy who is killing them. And in this movie, what they do is they make the teenagers kind of bad, but also a little bit sympathetic. And then they have they basically break into this guy's house, and because they hear that he has a settlement from a rich family whose daughter killed his daughter. And so, so he's just sitting on like a pile of cash, apparently. And he's a former Marine. They know that. And then they discover that he's blind. And so they're like, oh, this is going to be an easy mark. And so they break into this guy's house one night, and it turns out he's not an easy mark. And he quite justifiably starts killing them. And so for the first, like, two-thirds of the movie, he's defending himself from this home invasion. And then you discover that he's not as innocent as you think. And so he then becomes the bad guy. And then you also kind of learn more about especially the girl, it's a trio that breaks into the house, and the girl, the kind of the lead guy, and then the girl's boyfriend. And the girl's boyfriend is kind of the bad boy, and he's the first to die to prove that the situation is serious. And then you start to learn more about the girl, and you kind of become sympathetic to her. Mm-hmm. And it's a very fine line that they draw in this script. And so anyway, it is very tense. It all takes place in this one house. The house has nooks and crannies that maybe seem a little too big for this house, but we can get into that. I guess I'll end there. Matt, what did you think of Don't Breathe? I'm curious.
Yeah, this is, I would say this is interesting. You're absolutely right that it plays with a lot of horror tropes. And it uses a lot of horror tropes, right? The darkness and the being chased around a house by a baddie and being unable to escape and all that. And then, you know, twists and turns. There's a lot of horror tropey stuff going on while they're upending some of the sort of narrative expectations that we have. That being said, I don't. Well, no. That being said, I hated it. No, I did not hate this movie. I didn't really like it either. And I guess when I see a movie like this, and you know that when we started this podcast, I said things like, I don't really like horror movies, and you've given me an appreciation for many of them, but I still have this part of my brain that goes, what exactly am I supposed to find enjoyable about this experience? And I find myself asking that a lot with the last few horror movies that you have given me, right? This is very tense. It's very sort of nerve-wracking. It's very violent. It's not super-duper bloody as these movies go, but it's got some blood in it. It's got a scene that I don't really even want to talk about. So I get to the end of this movie and I go, well, I mean, that was like a well put together, well shot, well acted movie that I didn't enjoy, right? And I feel like that when I think back on it, like, what was I supposed to like about that movie? And I guess some people really do just enjoy the feeling of being terrified, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing that people enjoy roller coasters for, right?
I think it's a very different thing because I love roller coasters, but I don't.
So that was what I was going to ask.
Yeah, no, I love roller coasters, but this just, you know, it doesn't. It spends a lot of time on some pretty depressing stuff, and you know, then it ends, right? There's not a lot there to like recommend the experience of watching it, right? And to a horror movie fan, that's the good stuff, right? So I think at this point, I'm more curious about why I like the horror movies that I do like more than I am, wanting to be like, oh, this horror movie or that horror movie, you know, is out there and I hate it, right? Because I did really like Hellraiser. I did really like there have been a few of them that I've enjoyed, but most of them I get to the end of it and I'm like, I don't feel good right now, right? And it's funny, I have the list right in front of me right now, and I would say my most common rating for a lot of these horror movies is 5, right? I end up on, yeah, it was well done, and I, you know, think it was good, but I didn't love it. it's funny, the ones that stand out are ones that are like sort of towering. Like, I loved Get Out. I loved Hellraiser. But like, you know, Let the Right One In, I gave it a 5. The Ruins, I gave it a 5.
Ruins, yeah.
Gerald's Game, I gave it a 5. You know, so
Did we watch the one with the monsters, the one where everybody has to be quiet. Yeah, we did.
Yes, we did. I wonder what I gave that one. I really didn't like that one, I think. The Quiet Place. I gave it a 4.
Quiet Place. Yeah. Oh, 4. Yeah. The sequel's coming out this summer and I'm excited.
You mean the sequel to the sequel? I was going to say there's already been a sequel, right?
There's already been a sequel, which I really liked. And then this Quiet Place Part 2, and then now the Quiet Place Day 1, which is the kind of the arrival of the monsters. So you kind of see them arrive on Earth.
Yeah. If you want to talk about the performances, I think the performances are really good. I think a lot of like the little twists are really well executed. Like when the one guy convinces the blind man to stab the corpse so that he's not killed when the blind man tries to stab him. Very clever, a neat little twist that I've not seen before. But overall, again, I didn't like, I just don't get a whole lot of out of something like this. Right. I don't want to feel tense for an hour and a half, you know?
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I think there is something enjoyable to that for a certain part of the population. And I think one of the things we've discovered is not just in the horror movies, but also kind of sad movies. Like, I have enjoyed the experience of extreme emotion being brought on by a movie more than you have, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking of, what's the tsunami movie? That one.
The Impossible.
Yeah, The Impossible, right? Great movie, but not anything that I ever want to sit and watch or even really think about again, you know?
Whereas I've actually probably seen that movie 3 times now, including our last viewing. And I will probably watch it again at some point because I just think it's such a... There's something wonderful to me about the experience of being moved to an emotion, whether it's sad or whether it's fear or whether it's joy. And I feel like you like the joy plenty, but you don't like the others sometimes, the darker emotions.
Yeah, no, and that's true. And I don't avoid those emotions in my own life, right? One of the things I'm sort of known for in my interpersonal relationships is like, it's okay to feel sad and it's okay to allow yourself to feel sad and to sit in that emotion. Like, you don't have to cover it up and you don't have to like smile just for the sake of smiling. And I'm very accepting of that. But in my entertainment, I want to be entertained. I'd like to be entertained now, please.
Which also is interesting to me because you have this blanket no superheroes thing. And to me, superheroes are kind of like adventure and joy personified. And
yeah, but I don't find it entertaining, right? Honestly, I would rather watch a making of documentary of any single one of those movies over the movie itself.
Oh, right? Interesting.
Yeah, like if I 100% guarantee that I would rate the making of Joss Whedon's The Avengers higher than Joss Whedon's The Avengers. 100%.
Wow.
That's interesting, right? And I'm learning something and it's cool to get to see, but watching the Hulk grab somebody's leg and go bam, 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 that's boring. I don't care at all about that, right? Some guy is really good at computer animation. I don't care.
Okay. There is something I was going to send you actually recently that had to do with the we're getting way off track here, but I just a couple days ago watched this video about performance capture and how it used, especially in this case in the Planet of the Apes movies, in Rise of the Planet, which we watched a couple weeks ago, and also how it evolved from Gollum, which was mostly just motion capture, and then they started doing performance capture in King Kong, and then carried that on. So now performance capture is the norm, and you're actually getting the performance of the actors' faces in these creatures and animals and whatever. So I was going to send that to you, and I think I might, because it is a fairly interesting look behind the curtain, and I think it might help you appreciate those movies a little more, if not like them more.
I find that interesting in and of itself, right? But not as a window into enjoying the movie more. Like it doesn't. Watching computer animation doesn't appeal to me in and of itself, right?
But so what I'm saying though is you're seeing the performance through that, and you're saying you can't look through the CGI to appreciate the performance.
Why would I have to, like, why should I have to do that, right? That's the thing, you know?
Because there's something fascinating about seeing something else.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, we see humans all the time, so, like, you're not at all interested in seeing something else?
Yeah, like, I think that, for instance, the work done with animatronics is fascinating and amazing, right? Like, if you think about the early Alien movies and... obviously the guy in the costume in the first Alien is kind of ridiculous, but a lot of the puppeteering that was going on, and then in later movies, the actual animatronic stuff, that stuff is amazing, right? I love that. And I think that if you did that with computer animation, there's just something unavoidably lost there.
Okay, well, we're going to see, actually, because Fede Alvarez is directing the newest Alien movie, which is being released this summer. And so that brings us back to his movie that we're talking about, Don't Breathe. And I just want, we don't have a whole lot of time, so I wanted to talk about a couple things. And
sure.
One of them is the threading of the needle for these characters I thought was fascinating. And to make this guy a sympathetic character, but also someone that you wanted to see defeated. But then, on the flip side, making these criminals sympathetic, but someone you wanted to see succeed is kind of an amazing feat in and of itself. And so I thought that was interesting. And what the thing that you find out later in the movie about in the last third or maybe halfway through, as the teenagers are locked in to this house, and so they have to find another way out, and they're like, oh, there was a door that leads out of the basement that is latched from the inside, so we can do that. We can get there and get out. So they go into the basement, and that's where they find that this man has captured and held captive the young woman who killed his daughter in a car accident. And so she has been his captive. And then you learn that later in the story that he has actually impregnated her and is using her to give him a new daughter. So that's when you find out this guy is nuts and insane in the evil way, like the evil character way that you want now to see him defeated. And so, like, when you're crafting a horror movie and it's not, and you need to add something that's more than just real life, more than just the average people and the average horror amount of evil that people have in them, you are creating, and what he's doing is Fetty was creating a villain, like a Freddy Krueger. I mean, Freddy Krueger was a child killer or a child molester or something before the parents got together and killed him and then turned him into a supernatural being, right? Jason has a traumatic backstory like that too. Like, the best of these villains have these kind of great backstories that lead them into these, I don't know, to be the horrific person that they are. And so I haven't seen the sequel to this movie, but there is a sequel, and I'm a little curious as to where they go, because it's got to be this guy, right? He's the star of, you know, of this franchise, I would say. Yeah. And so I'm very curious where it goes with him. But the actor is played by Stephen Lang, by the way, who got his start with I believe it was, well, he was in Avatar, the first Avatar. He was the bad guy in Avatar, and I think that probably vaulted him to some stardom. And so then he did this, and I think he's done some other stuff too. I feel like he was before Avatar. I think I'm thinking of the wrong guy. I was going to say American Beauty, but maybe not.
Anyway. He did. You know, it was a really interesting actorial choice here, director choice. He doesn't talk a whole lot in the early parts of the movie. Well, he doesn't talk a whole lot at all, but at the end of the movie, he does some talking. But through a big chunk of the first part of this movie, he doesn't talk. And there was a part of me that was like irritated by that choice, right? Like the guy is blind. He's not mute, right? And, you know, it seems like a horror movie choice to make him like a implacable force of nature type thing, right? That won't say anything. But from a sort of story perspective, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for him to not be like, you know, yelling at the people that are supposedly breaking into his home, or that he thinks are breaking into his home, or, you know, taunting them or doing some sort of speaking well before he actually does. And then, of course, when he does... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you don't think there's something to be said for him listening and using his senses to listen for the...
Yeah, he does do that, right? I'm not saying he should be talking a ton, but there were definitely times when in this movie when I thought, why isn't he just say something right now? You know, why doesn't he say, get the hell out of here, you stupid kids, or something like that, right? Instead, he just goes about his business this exact same way that Michael Myers would. I almost said Michael Moore, but that's a different thing.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really like that.
Okay. There is a couple questions I had, and it's things about this movie that are kind of nitpicky. The fact that they have this scene where one of the kids who breaks in has this like handmade like fall asleep gas that he puts into the guy's room, and I'm like, well, why didn't that work? I want to know that.
I looked this up on the Wikipedia page because I also wanted to know, and the answer is it did work, but the loud sound that he produced by, I think it was dropping something or like they basically
he had to break into this.
It initially. He shot the lock. That's right. So he. It did work to quiet him, but then they shot the lock and that loud noise woke him up.
Ah, that's interesting because I mean the whole point of that gas would be that nothing would wake you up, but I would assume. But in that case, why would you shoot a gun if you know? I don't know. There was a couple things about that. The other thing is that they put the dog to sleep, and the same thing. Like if you're giving the dog a bunch of sleeping pills and the dog is like knocked out, then there's no reason why 20 minutes later the dog is suddenly
and the dog
be awake
is
again.
Extraordinarily persistent, like more persistent than an attack dog normally is, right?
Yes yeah,
like
absolutely,
like there's attack dog and then there's persistent attack dog and then there's whatever this was.
Sure. And you know what, I'll kind of give that, like if he's a military guy, maybe he has some sort of military trained, you know, or the types of things that they train dogs to do or you can train dogs to do, I'll buy that.
Sure.
But and this house had bits inside, like the space between the walls that the girl climbs through. I'm like, that's a lot of space in this house.
Yeah.
So
yeah, most residential homes. It's funny because the home in here is in Detroit, and I am in Milwaukee, which is a very similar style of housing, very similar housing stock. And I'm here to tell you that not only is there not enough space for a person to crawl through the walls, there's barely enough space for like rats to crawl through the walls. It's sometimes they're built very, very little in the way of wall cavities. So,
yeah, yeah. Although I did like that they kind of highlight the issue of housing in.
All these gunshots
by the.
These gunshots go off and so on and so forth. But it's because he's living in a neighborhood where his is the only house. It also explains why he's able to keep this girl captive for so long without anyone noticing. That I felt like was well justified. So anyways, we're getting on towards the end here. Yeah.
Yeah. Only one person survives the whole ordeal. The girl does. And everybody else is dead, including the captive girl and the boyfriend and the guy who wants to be the boyfriend. They're all killed. And she escapes with the money. With the guy's money, which is interesting. So, and he apparently escapes without anybody investigating his basement or looking in his house. So so he's captured and is in the news as the victim of the crime. So at the end of the movie. So that's, I guess, where we end things. How did you feel about that?
I actually thought that was more well justified than a lot of these horror movie endings, you know? It makes sense that, okay, so he did a fair amount of stabbing here, which maybe doesn't, I mean, if you just say the blind guy fought off the intruders, but presumably the police department is going to do a little bit of investigating and be like, wow, there's a lot of bullet holes here and there's, you know, there's a lot of stab wounds and why is this guy, you know, but as a hand wavy answer for why this guy didn't get arrested at the end, sure, I'll buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Great. Great. Awesome. Anything else to add, or you want to go ahead and give it a rating?
No. Let's. That's right. I rate first because I was the newbie.
Yes, you rate first.
Have to admit it was funny looking back through these ratings because I 100% am giving this a 5. Yeah. That was before I looked back through the ratings. Like it's already written in my notebook. This is a 5 for me. It's a well done movie, and you know that's fine. But I don't get anything out of that, or at least not much.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
What about you,
Travis?
I'm going
to give it a 7.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
give it a 7.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's pretty good. I enjoyed revisiting it. I didn't have big quibbles, but I am curious about where they go with this story. So I might go ahead and watch the sequel someday.
Maybe next week, not as part of the podcast, but just as part of our lives, I can listen to the newest Mr. Wives album and you can watch Don't Breathe 2 and we can do a little mini review.
Yeah. Okay. I'll endeavor to do that. So great. Excellent. Well, what have you got for me for next week?
Next week, have you ever heard of MGMT?
I feel like maybe, but not enough to know for sure.
Okay, it's pretty popular. This is a pretty big band. They're not, they haven't done a whole lot lately, but their first couple albums were pretty big deals. It's hard for me to explain what sort of music they are. I want to call it electronic indie pop, sort of, but very, very different from Mr. Wives. This is kind of groove based, and there's a little bit of singing, a little bit of looping. I really enjoy this, though, especially these. So I actually gave you a playlist. I think it's 9 songs. Yep, it's 9 songs, and it's actually off of 3 different albums. So I gave you 3 songs off of their first album, 3 songs off of their second album, and 3 songs off of their third album. And
okay,
I think this gives you a nice overview of their career. The most recent one of these albums that's on here is from 2018. I don't know if they've done a whole lot since then, but I'm curious what you think. So what do you have for me, Travis?
All right. Well, Matthew, I wanted to give you something because next episode is our 69th episode. Mm-hmm. I wanted to give you something a little bit gay, and so I'm wondering if you had seen the Elton John biopic Rocket Man.
Oh no, I haven't.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to go ahead and assign that to you then. We're going to watch Rocket Man, which is essentially an Elton John biopic. Now, do you remember when we watched the action movie, the Kingsman?
Yes.
Taron Egerton, the young man who was the star of that movie, plays Elton John in this movie. And I believe he was nominated for an Oscar for it. It's a pretty good movie. I really enjoyed it, and I was going back and forth between doing this one and doing Bohemian Rhapsody.
Sure.
Which would you have preferred between a Queen biopic and an Elton John biopic?
Well, okay. So in the abstract, I would say a Queen biopic, but I've heard better things about Rocket Man than I've heard the Bohemian Rhapsody is really more ego strokey, like approved by the band type of thing. Whereas I think I've heard a fair bit about this, and it's a little more of a fantastical journey type of thing, which for me is a lot more interesting than, and then we played Wembley, right? So,
I
would
say it is kind of like
one.
That. Although I will say the Freddie Mercury stuff in Bohemian Rhapsody is pretty good. But all right, we'll stick with this then, and maybe we'll put Bohemian Rhapsody in the back pocket for another time.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah. Hey, so if someone does have suggestions about what we can listen to in something similar to Mr. Wives, or if they really disagreed with your take on horror movies, how would they let us know?
Well, they would email us at exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com, which I'm checking right now, and the inbox is empty. So folks, please fill up our inbox or go to our Facebook page. Just search for Exposing Ourselves and go ahead and hit like, because apparently we can't stream on Facebook now unless we have 100 subscribers. So get on that, everybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we should definitely, you and I should also work on sharing that with people. But I also wanted to say that we have a bunch of reviews, new reviews on our podcast page, at least on Apple Music. So I'm looking down here and we have awesome hosts, great conversation, fun way to expose myself to new music and movies. This is from T Dag. The hosts have great banter and excellent radio voices. Oh, that's new.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Cool concept, great hosts, an easy listen, a fun and lively podcast to rediscover and reconsider film and music. That's pretty recent. And so I'm feeling pretty good.
Well, thank you for everyone who has left us a review. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you haven't yet, please do so. Just go scroll down to the bottom of your podcast app on our show page, and you can scroll all the way down and leave us a review and let us know what you think of the show. Someone, by the way, left a great review, but only 4 stars. So Three Rivers Films LLC, their review is quite nice, although it's only a 4-star review. And I'm like, well, that's it's interesting. Brings us down to a 4.9, but all right.
That's okay. Yeah. I can handle a 4.9. I really appreciate you, Three Rivers Films. That's awesome.
Thanks. And Matt, I really appreciate you. Thank you for exposing yourself to me.
You got it, Travis. Hey, thank you for exposing yourself to me.